This Sunday afternoon here on BBC Radio 3, it's now 2 o'clock and time for the Early Music Show, which this week comes live from the York Early Music Festival. It's presented by Lucy Skeeping.
The National Centre for Early Music here in York for today's live Early Music Show. We have an enthusiastic audience with us, ready to enjoy a feast of delights across the next hour. The York Early Music Festival is now well and truly underway. It opened on Friday evening with the London Handel Players and a celebration of Baroque dance, and it continues for the coming week with concert programmes that explore this year's theme, Entente Cordiale. In other words, the musical connections between England and France. Delma Tomlin, the director of the National Centre for Early Music, will be taking us through some of the highlights of the festival, and I'll also be chatting to the conductor and founder of the Early Opera Company, Christian Kernin. In addition, we have live music from violinist Kati Debreceni, viol player Richard Boothby, and keyboard player Peter Seymour. And we're also joined by Adur Violzegal, who are going to... They're sitting just a few feet away, actually, and they're ready to play. So they're going to kick things off for us right now with Mara Marais' Fantasy on Echo. Adur Violzegal, Jonathan Dunford and Sylvia Abramovich, performing the Fantasy on Echo by Marin Marais from his first book of viol pieces, live here at the York Early Music Festival, and we'll be hearing more from them later in the programme. But I'm delighted to say we're joined now by the conductor, Christian Kernin. Actually, it's going to be a bit of a flying visit because he has to dash off shortly to rehearse the Early Opera Company for their performance this evening. But before I chat to him about it, let's hear a little from their latest CD. This is the aria Di Tacere e Di Schernirmi from Handel's Xerxes.
Di tacere, di schernirmi,
Whoever taught you, cruel one, an aria from Handel's Xerxes, sung by Anna Stefani with the Early Opera Company, conducted by Christian Kernin. And Christian, thank you for joining me. I'm really pleased you did manage to pop in, because I know you've got a big performance tonight. Now, you founded the Early Opera Company in the early 90s, and it certainly seems to be going from strength to strength, which is brilliant. What have you got coming up for the rest of the year?
After a bit of a summer break, we are back in the Sam Wanamaker Theatre at the Globe.
Fabulous venue.
Amazing. For people that don't know, it's a recreation of a Jacobean theatre, which is entirely lit by candles, which makes the whole event just shine, basically, in a very different way.
Wonderful. If not a little uncomfortable for the audience, isn't
it? Yeah, they've actually put in some cushions now, so I think there's rather more...
Now, you've been described as a maverick conductor, which I suppose must mean a little bit unconventional. I mean, how important is for you, say, to keep early opera audiences on the edge of their seats?
I think there's been a big turnaround, particularly in productions of Handel operas, and not just Handel, Rameau, Purcell, to realise that actually sometimes it's good to bring them into our own day, do them in modern dress or for a modern perspective. I mean, there's a production of Platé that I'm in, which sort of does the rounds, but it's in Stuttgart at the moment, where I start off in bed on stage. I'm woken up by the orchestra, jump into the pit, and then start conducting.
Great. That sounds fun. So tell us a bit about your programme tonight. Do you start that one in bed as well?
No, actually, I'm on stage from the beginning of that one.
So. Oh, phew. What are you going to be doing?
Well, we're doing a double bill of Dido and Aeneas and Actaeon by Charpentier.
Now, Actaeon's probably a bit less familiar to some people out there, although Dido and Aeneas, of course, is a great popular one. Why have you put them together? Do they work particularly well?
I mean, it's always hard to find a piece to go with Dido because it's so amazing. I mean, it's probably one of the most complete and wonderful bits of music ever written.
But short.
So we needed to find something short to go with it, so we've got two nice halves. Actaeon itself is in, obviously, being French, is in the French style, which... Purcell is very much influenced by French music at the time. The players that were playing in London at the time were French taught, a lot of them, even playing on French style instruments.
Well, listen, no time. Yeah. Many thanks for joining us. We're going to let you go off now and to go to your rehearsal before you get a mutiny among the ranks.
Thank you.
So all the best for tonight. Let's have a little taste of Charpentier's Actaeon now.
Oh,
That was nice. That was Cœur des Chasseurs, the hunting chorus from Charpentier's Actéon, performed there by Lézard Florissant. And for anyone, by the way, who's in or near York, the opera is going to be performed tonight, along with Purcell's Dido and Aeneas, as you heard, by the Early Opera Company, conducted by Christian Kernan, at the Jack Lyons Concert Hall in the University of York. Now, this is a 6:30 start, and I'm told that just one or two tickets are still available, so rush along there. Well, the theme of this year's festival, as we've already heard, is Entente Cordiale, celebrating 300 years of music making in England and France. Appropriately enough, having arrived from Paris just yesterday, Jonathan Dunford and Sylvia Abramovich have already introduced us to that great French master of the bass viol, Marin Marais. So now let's kind of set the balance a bit with some live music from this side of the channel. Here are violinist Cathy Debreceni, Richard Boothby on the bass viol, and keyboard player Peter Seymour with a piece by William Laws, one of the great English court composers from the time of Charles I, his Fantasia in D major.
Thank you.
Patti Debreczeni, Richard Boothby and Peter Seymour with Fantasia in D major by William Laws. And many thanks, you three, for that. Don't go too far away, though, because I know you promised to play for us some more later. But my next guest is Delma Tomlin, who's joined me here at the desk, director of the National Centre for Early Music and one of the main brains, I should say, behind the festival here in York. Thank you so much for coming. Now, it's day three of the festival, isn't it, Delma? And I know things are already in full swing. Tell us a little more about this Entente Cordiale theme that you've got this year, and then, of course, about some of the highlights that we can look forward to.
Sure. Thank you, Lucy. We're starting around 1415 and going on for 400 years of social history and for music and culture. So, and obviously, sometimes we get on really well. Other times, we're not so keen on each other between the channel. But the joy of the music making in between time, of course, and the contrast. There's contrasted styles. And we were talking last night, or singing last night, about how that the music, really, when Henry VIII split from the church, how the musicians' lives became very inward-looking, really, because they no longer have that relationship with continental Europe. So it's very interesting how politics, history, affects the music-making.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I'm sure there's going to be some lovely stuff. We've got several more broadcasts on Radio 3 to come from the festival, including the performance given by one of my very favourite vocal groups, The 16, here in the fabulous York Minster, which is being broadcast live on Wednesday night. But if you can't wait till then, here's a little taster.
Thank you.
16, directed by Harry Christophers in Francisco Guerrero's Laudate Dominum. And if you tune into Radio 3 on Wednesday night at 7:30, you can hear them on Live in Concert from York Minster in a full programme of Guerrero and his contemporary Alonso Lobo. But for now, you're listening to The Early Music Show. I'm Lucy Skeeping, and we're live at the National Centre for Early Music as part of this year's York Early Music Festival. Now, we began the programme with music by the 17th century French composer Marin Marais. He was actually quite an interesting character. He was a composer, a teacher, an innovator, and a much admired performer at the court of Versailles. We're going to be finding out a bit more about him in just a few minutes from Jonathan Dunford. But first, let's hear some more of his music. This is a saraband followed by a minuet, and is played on two bass viols.
Thank you.
And Jonathan, if you'd like to now put down your bass viol, you can come and join me, careful, at the microphone. Just putting away, obviously, a very valuable and ancient instrument and running across the front of the stage. See, this is what it's like. Thank you. Got your breath back. Two bass viols together, I mean, you could say that was quite a somber sound. I mean, those pieces may have been based on dance forms, but quite, you know, gets to you a bit. It's not frivolity, shall we say.
In fact, the sarabande was first a very quick dance, and Louis XIV always wants to change everything, so he made it a very slow and grave dance. So he could dance it, probably.
Yes. But let's talk a little about Marais, actually. What is the significance of Marais when it comes to the viol? He's a very important figure, isn't he?
Marais is important in every aspect of the viol because he was important for the instrument's construction. He's the person that's credited, at least in one source, as having put the wound strings on the bass strings, which allows the instrument to play in a lower octave, and also as a teacher. He was amazing because he thought of people like us in 2015, back in 1686, by publishing music where he indicated every last fingering, every last ornament, and even Lully, who's the great court composer for Louis XIV, never put those ornaments down. So he gives us a key to all of the French Baroque music, more so than any other composer.
A little sort of window into the past.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he was obviously, as well as kind of an artist and a composer, then he was a technical innovator. I mean, with the adding bits and pieces and sort of getting new strings and so on the instrument, which of course enabled wider kind of style of music to be played.
Also, as I say always, I've been living in France for 30 years. When you look at the English viol, it has 6 strings. The French viol has 7 strings. The English harpsichord has 1 keyboard, and the French keyboard has 2 keyboards, because Versailles was the biggest castle in the world, so they had to do everything bigger and better.
Do we know anything about Marais the man? I mean, his character. I heard that he had a really big family.
Marais is incredible. I found documents written, handwritten documents, testaments and things like that, so you can really see, as if you were talking, like we're talking now, with Marais. Marais had 19 children, all of which played the viol, including the daughters.
That would be some consort.
That's some consort. But the daughters, of course, didn't have the possibility to play and professionally in the 17th century. And the sons, Vincent, was the first person that was supposed to become the Ordinaire de Musique Chambre, and then Roland afterwards.
Well, now, we do know that Marais had a teacher who was, and there was a film called Tous les Matins du Monde, came out some years ago, perhaps some people have seen it, which portrayed his teacher, Saint-Colombe, it was his name, as a very mysterious, kind of powerful figure. What was his influence on Marais? Because we're going to hear a piece by him in a moment. Tell us something about the relationship.
Firstly, I have to tell you that Saint-Colombe, the movie, is totally a novel that was written based on nothing.
Oh, dear. How Hollywood.
the fantasy of Pascal Quignard. And real Saint-Colombe lived near the Louvre in Paris and was a normal Parisian, maybe Protestant, so he had some problems in 1685 with the Révocation d'Edit de Nantes. But Saint-Colombe was also a great master. They say that he's the one who added the 7th string on the bass viol, which changed the French bass viol. And he's the first person to change the hand position from the old lute position to a cello kind of position, which allowed us to play a lot faster. And that's what you see in all of Saint-Colombe's music, lots of very, very quick notes that you had never seen in French music beforehand.
So as you were saying, really a kind of technical change immediately starts to influence the artistic output. One follows the other.
Absolutely, and that made the French viol become a solo instrument that all of Europe afterwards loved. But the English were the ones who really started playing the viol better than anybody else, that's what they say.
Well, you're going to play a piece now by Saint-Colombe. So would you kindly, very briefly, do the honors and introduce it?
Okay. I have to go back in tune, of course, but...
Why not introduce it right here at this microphone, and so then you can run around.
This is a piece that's called Tombeau, which means a memorial piece. And the person who copied the music added some titles, which are Les Regrets, The Regrets, then the Carillon, which are the church bells, Then the Pelle de Caron, the Caron that takes the people in the dismal bark to Hades. And after that, there's the Les Pleurs, which is the section of the tears, which is known from the film. And it finishes with the Joie des Élysées, Les Élysées, which is the hope of paradise.
Okay, well, we're just going to hear one of those. So if you'd like to take your places, not your partners, well, take your partner as well. Sylvia's waiting for you over there. And tune up for us. Going to hear Tombeau Les Regrets by Saint-Colomb, the teacher of Marin Marais.
Thank you.
Jonathan Dunford and Sylvia Abramovich performing Tombeau les Regrets by Le Sieur de Saint-Colombe. Now, at 9:45 this evening, Jonathan and Sylvia are going to be performing here at the National Centre for Early Music with their son, Thomas. He's a lutenist and a guitar player, and we had hoped he was going to be able to join us this afternoon to make it a bit more of a family affair, but unfortunately, for us anyway, he's hot-footing it here from Zagreb, where he's been playing with Les Arts Florissants, which sounds pretty good to me. But we can actually still hear him through the wonders of technology, of course. Here he is on disc, accompanying one of the best-known lute songs of the Elizabethan age, John Dowland's Can She Excuse?
Can she excuse my wants with virgin's cloak? Shall I call my lord when she calls my mind? Are those his vials which had a flesh into smoke? Must I praise the leaves this red old I find? No, 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 the shadows of the shadow of my sand. Always be a note with my side in. Cold always like to let it out.
Excuse My Wrongs, John Dowland's song played there by Thomas Dunford on the lute with singers Ruby Hughes, Renu van Mechelen, Paul Agnew and Alain Bouet. One of Tudor England's most famous songs today, at any rate, a kind of lover's complaint, which I must admit does sound rather cheerful at the same time. Now we're going to return to France, and we've already heard about the importance, in fact the dominance, of the viol during the 17th century. But what was the place of the violin at that time? Well, it seems that it depended on which country you were in. In Italy, for instance, violin technique was actually developing in leaps and bounds and quite highly developed, whereas both France and England were still rather suspicious of the violin. The French did allow violins to be played kind of en masse when it came to the court orchestra, Lully's 24 Violons du Roi. But when it came to the intimacy of chamber music, Louis XIV certainly still favoured the bass viol at this time. Gradually, though, things moved on, and one composer who was keen to exploit the possibilities of the violin by combining both the French and the Italian styles was a man called Jean-Marie Leclerc. Here's Cathy Debreceni to play for us now with Richard Boothby and Peter Seymour, two movements from Leclerc's sonata Le Tombeau.
Thank you.
Many thanks for that. Beautifully played. So interesting to hear some of that kind of early violin virtuosic sonata like that. That was the first two movements of Sonata Le Tombo by Jean-Marie Leclerc, performed live here at the National Centre for Early Music in York by Cathy de Brezzeni, Richard Boothby and Peter Seymour. And they've managed to creep over to join me at the desk as I've been speaking, which was rather brilliant. Yeah, very quiet, hardly a creak. So now, Cathy, I know you're hardly a stranger to York, of course, because when it comes, because you've been a performer here so much, and I'm sure many people in the audience have heard you a lot, but this is your first year as artistic advisor. What has that entailed?
Well, that's a very grand title, and I'm very happy to be the artistic advisor of the York Festival. It's a very pleasurable title, too, because what it entails is traipsing up to York, which is in itself a very pleasurable experience, to have meetings with my fellow artistic advisors, John Bryan and Peter Seymour, and of course Delma and Lindsay Kemp. So we go into a room here in the National Centre for Early Music. We have lots and lots of coffee and a copious amount of biscuits, and we don't come out until the next year's festival has come some way from where it has been in the beginning of the meeting.
The smoke come out of the chimney when when you've made up your mind.
Absolutely, the smoke comes out of the chimney. Abemus papam, abemus festivalem, and then that's how
brilliant.
That's usually how it goes. And then the crowning glory is Delma takes us to lunch.
Richard, we've already touched on some of the issues of this English and French attitudes to the violin. Tell us a little bit about some of the other musical similarities that there were between the two countries.
In terms of the viol, the French took over from the English. The first half of the 17th century, the English were the top dogs when it comes to playing the viol. We have Simpson, of course, Christopher Simpson. We have Alfonso Ferrabosco, who was described as the great viol player of the first half of the century. And as the when we get to the Civil War and then the Restoration with Charles, who famously only liked music that he could tap his foot to, and the musical sort of energy for the viol goes out and is passed over the Channel to the French. And whereas the first half of the century, the French, there's very little viol music. The second half is where it begins to happen.
Well, I'm afraid we're sort of running out of time, and that's the thing about live shows. So thank you both for chatting. I'm going to let you go back to your instruments in a minute to join Peter Seymour, but just you're going to play a piece by Maran Mare, who I guess is the man of the hour.
Yes.
Tell us what you're going to play.
Well, it's called the Sonnerie de Saint-Geniez-du-Mont de Paris, which is a church in Paris, no longer with us, which had a famous set of bells. And Mare's piece is built on an ostinato, as we call it today, in the bass, which is what Peter plays at just three.
That's
notes.
A sort of repeating pattern.
Yeah, absolutely,
isn't it?
Repeats hundreds of times.
Early boogie.
It starts in D, goes to A, F, and then back to D again. And over that, there is this extraordinary series of variations, in a way.
Right, off you go. Wend your way through valuable ancient instruments that are on the stage. We've got a harpsichord up there as well. Wonderful. I believe there's some lovely church bell sounds going to be heard in a moment. Not real ones, in the music. hypnotic, a musical impression of the bells of a church that sadly no longer stands. The Sonnerie de Saint-Geneviève du Mont de Paris by Mara Mare, played live here at the National Centre for Early Music by Cathy De Brezzini, Richard Boothby and Peter Seymour. And I'm afraid that's it for today's edition of the Early Music Show here at the York Early Music Festival. Many thanks to all my guests, Christian Kernan, Jonathan Dunford, Sylvia Abramovich, Cathy De Brezzini, Richard Boothby, Peter Seymour, and of course, the woman who makes it all happen every year, the ever energetic Delma Tomlin, who I must say seems to look younger each time I meet her. And I have to say that if we'd had time, she would have told us all sorts of other things about the festival concerts coming up, including the annual Young Artist Competition, which is always a great big hit with the audience. We've got two more early music shows from the festival coming up later this month, but next week's programme comes from a little further south, the Manchester International Festival. I hope you can join me then. But for now, from a surprisingly rainy York, after all that sunshine, it's goodbye from me and au revoir.
The Early Music Show was presented live from York by Lucy Skeeping. Listen to it again for the next 30 days via the BBC Radio 3 website.